This is the Suno India production, and you're listening to Cyber Democracy. This podcast is in association with Internet Freedom Foundation. Check out their work on internetfreedom.in. The internet was built by people. They made it their home and used it to teach people skills and spread knowledge. Several individuals grew up with internet. They knew the value of it. In 2015, when they saw Facebook attempting to take control over it using their Free Basics and Internet.org program, people rose up. They turned it into what was called the Net Neutrality Movement or the Save the Internet Movement. This movement led to the formation of the Internet Freedom Foundation. This movement also created the awareness about digital rights in modern India. In this episode, I speak to Kiran Jonalgadda of HasGeek about the after effects of the Net Neutrality Movement. Welcome to Cyber Democracy Podcast, Kiran. So the Net Neutrality Movement in India is one of the most important people's movement that took place over access to internet infrastructure. But it seems like it is one of the underdocumented movements. You have been voicing some concerns over documentation about the movement. Can you tell us more about your concerns about this part?
Sure. So I think it comes out in multiple parts. You know, one is typically if you want to understand something that happened, the standard resource to go to is Wikipedia. And there is no Wikipedia page for the Save the Internet movement in India. It used to exist. It was deleted. And so this is in part a gripe against Wikipedia's policy of deleting things that do not have enough editorial input rather than adding editors to it. But Wikipedia aside, I think it's also disappeared from the public imagination. So one of the consequences of Save the Internet is that we established clear, bright line net neutrality regulations in India that were among the best in the world. And very shortly after India got this, the US withdrew their net neutrality regulations, as a result of which there's been considerable backlash in the US. So while India did the right thing, its consequences are not felt because they're not part of the public imagination. So data rates in India crashed subsequently. Internet in India is now far cheaper than it was before the campaign, and it's also far faster than it was before the campaign. But most people credit Jio for this and not a public campaign. So we tend to think that we have good internet because of the benevolence of a corporate player with a telecom license. We forget that we have good internet because we demanded good internet. So one of my concerns is that there is no public acknowledgement of the fact that we got what we demanded. It's seen as just being one more incident of some powerful player giving something.
Even the Parliamentary Committee on IT has not submitted its report on the matter, even though there were decisions made by TRAI and the government on accepting net neutrality. Is this something of a concern, considering there were a lot of reports which were submitted to the Parliamentary Committee itself that why they should consider net neutrality and why should they take action over it? We haven't seen anything come out of them.
That's correct. This has been a curious learning about how parliamentary committees work. You know, I understand that they work in confidence because that's the only way they can work around the anti-defection law, which allows the members of a committee to voice an independent opinion from their own parties. It's understandable that confidentiality is part of their hearing process, but it then comes with the expectation that the hearing process doesn't run forever. So the fact that this committee has not submitted the report and that the proceedings are not public is a cause for concern because we don't know what was said. Apart from informal gatherings or informal understanding based on what people have shared. So which then opens up this question of saying what really happened over there? What did telecom operators say? What did all the various stakeholders say to the committee? What did the committee decide was an appropriate way forward? Should India have net neutrality regulations that are in law and not in regulation? We don't know what the committee's opinion is, which leaves the future uncertain, and that's not a pleasant place to be. So just to add to that as well, when TRAI passed their net neutrality regulations, one of the statements that they made as part of the regulation is that they would ideally like this to be something that the Department of Telecom enforces in telecom license, since telecom licenses are not issued by TRAI, but by DOT. And what they said is that if DOT does not take action, then TRAI will do whatever it can. And we expected that it will actually go further up and say that instead of this being just a telecom license matter, it should be law. The right to access the internet in a free and unfettered manner should be backed by law and not just a license. And certainly not just a regulation. But none of these things have happened from what we know. And part of this outcome will be based on the parliamentary committee's report, which unfortunately is not out yet.
So after 4 years after the movement, you think that none of the issues that the People's Movement fought for have been achieved entirely? Also, considering that we made a strong statement, unlike the US, where they've revoked net neutrality under the Trump administration, do you see that it's going it in the right direction at least? You just said that it hasn't been ratified or there's no law on it yet. But you do hope for that, right?
Most certainly, yes. And I think the public have not forgotten, or rather have not forgotten what they stood for, even if they've forgotten that it was their choice that made it happen.
So speaking of something tangential, but access to the infrastructure in itself on about internet shutdowns, do you think it's a violation of the net neutrality principles that we have agreed to? Considering the reasons for violations are often vague and are not justified?
I think in spirit, but not in technicality. Because net neutrality is concerned with discrimination. And if you shut down the entire internet, it's not discriminating against particular content. It's discriminating against the entire internet. So it's a slightly different place to be. This would go deeper than net neutrality. You know, while net neutrality is concerned on the discrimination level, this is now just about access to information, which I think should be treated as a fundamental right.
Okay. So the recent Supreme Court order on internet shutdowns, when the editor from Kashmir Daily approached the Supreme Court against the internet shutdowns and demanded that it be restored, the Supreme Court did not make it a fundamental right yet, but did say that the fundamental rights of information and right to work do exist on the virtual space as well. But they did order the government to relook into the internet shutdowns. And what the government essentially did then is to start allowing few certain websites only, essentially whitelisting few websites. And I believe there are 300 websites that one can visit in Kashmir and nothing else. In some levels, this is clear violation of net neutrality. What do you think TRAI or any of the other regulators, telecom regulators or DOT should be doing about this?
So let's look at the layers of the problems. You know, I think first of all, the Supreme Court made a very mild judgment, and this has kind of been a trend of the Supreme Court in recent years, that they don't do enough. It should have been something that they spent a little more time on. I mean, the Supreme Court ordered a review of internet shutdowns but failed to lift the blockade. Honestly, I think that's a moral failure. The Supreme Court should be concerned about human rights more than anything else. But the next level that you get here is what the government did in response is a clear violation of net neutrality regulations. It should not have been allowed. There's a problem with the way the government responded to this as well. This is something TRAI should have shut down and has made it very clear that as a violation, this cannot be acceptable. So as a violation of their guidelines, this should not be acceptable. So I think there's a fairly clear problem over there. TRAI has been silent about this matter, which I think speaks for them not being secure in enforcing their duties as a regulator, which essentially speaks for what the government is doing in this country right now, that they essentially decide what is good for everyone without due process, which then makes it exceedingly hard for other institutions of the state to do their job. Now, on the actual ruling itself, on access to 300 websites, I think there's now been a fundamental misunderstanding of how the internet works. Ideas about how websites work that used to be valid 5 years ago are not valid today. You know, 5 years ago, you could say block a certain domain and you would lose the entire website, or rather allow a certain domain and you would get access to that particular website if you're doing a whitelist based approach. that does not work today. You know, in the last several years, thanks to cloud computing and new ideas like serverless computing, the internet or the website is not a single domain. A website can be composed of hundreds of other websites that come together into a single page at the end. So when you say allow a certain domain, but nothing else, that domain will not work in any case because it's composed of 100 other websites. So you will see this in everything. You'll see this on Facebook. You'll see this on Twitter. You open the page, it's going to connect to several different domains to retrieve parts of the page. So when you issue an order that says allow a certain domain, there is no technical way to implement it because first of all, an ISP can no longer see what the page contains because it's all encrypted. And even if they do static analysis where one engineer says, okay, let me see the page and see what is required to load this page and allow those additional domains as well, that does not mean the same set is going to work next week. So a whitelist-based approach to internet access is no longer feasible. The technology for that does not work anymore.
So in effect, what we have in Kashmir right now is what we feared would happen if there was free basics for Facebook, or if you said we don't have, India chooses not to have net neutrality, where only certain websites will be allowed or will be allowed for free. In essentially the market driving what websites an individual accesses. But in this case, it so happens that the government is driving it.
Yes. And so I think we've come to an outcome that's even worse than Free Basics. Because while Free Basics promised a whitelisted collection of websites, at least they worked. Now you've got a whitelist of websites that don't even work, which means that there is no internet in practice.
And this was just done to show the Supreme Court that the government is trying to provide internet access. So it's just to please the Supreme Court at some levels.
Yes. And so the fact of the Supreme Court allowing itself to be taken for a ride, I think is deplorable. This is not what you expect from a court.
So moving on, some of these discussions that access to internet, that net neutrality movement is stopping access to internet was something of an argument which was pushed by the anti-net neutrality industry. For example, a lot of people supporting Facebook Free Basics and the Airtel Zero programs are essentially saying that, look, by providing this, we are going to bring in a lot of people over the internet, and this will help India grow or also educate a lot of these people. But they were accusing everyone who was part of the net neutrality movement that they're stopping people from accessing the internet. And you should answer for that and provide a solution where you tell us that how do you plan to bring in a lot of millions of Indians who do not have internet onto the network? Do you have an answer for that right now?
Well, we solved the problem. I mean, just shortly after net neutrality regulations happened, India's internet usage boomed. Now, obviously, a lot of people credit Jio for doing this, but there are two parts to this. You know, one is when there was a claim that net neutrality will prevent Indians from getting on the internet. That claim has proven false. There are more Indians online today. In fact, several orders of magnitude more Indians online today than there were 4 years ago. So as a criteria-free question, in the sense of saying that if you do not account for why Indians came online, the fact is that Indians have come online. And therefore, there is no question of saying that what is the solution on offer. Now, if you also look at saying how did they come online, if you credit Jio, let's not forget that Jio was not just an internet connection. Jio was a collection of services as well. So they were all launched together. So you had Jio Cinema, Jio TV, Jio News, Jio Money, Jio Play, Jio Games. So there were a whole bunch of Jio apps that could have been a walled garden, just like Free Basics, but were not. Okay. Now, what Jio intended to do when they launched, whether they were intending to do open internet access or a walled garden, we do not know. We do not have access to their internal records. But the fact is, earlier they had a choice and now they don't. Now they cannot have a walled garden by regulation. It has to be open internet access. So, and this is what net neutrality achieved, that it made it clear that we were going to get good internet in this country and not yet another walled garden.
Right. It has its own place. And whatever the discussions that were pushed against net neutrality clearly are false. Or at least that's what the industry or the society is showing now. So in general, if one's looking towards public infrastructure and public networks, apart from the internet, so access to public infrastructure itself is becoming an important issue with shutdowns being spread across various public infrastructure. I mean, if you look at what's happening with, say, Kunal Kamra, where you have travel bans, then during some of the protests in Delhi, you had metro station shutdowns. It's increasingly looking like whatever that the government was trying to do on the internet, on shutting down the internet, is spreading on physical infrastructures as well. Do you think what the net neutrality movement worked for internet rights or access to internet at some levels can be used to tackle some of the physical world problems, like the government banning you from a metro station or the government banning you from a flight?
Yes, and I think these should be part of, should be argued on the basis of fundamental right. You know, we have a fundamental right to free movement in this country, and a regulated entity cannot violate a fundamental right. So it's fine to say that a private bus operator decides who's allowed to ride on their bus, but it's not okay for a highway operator to decide who's allowed to drive on the highway. And the same applies for a flight, that while an airline may have safety precautions that allow a no-fly ban to be enforced, this has to be regulated. It cannot be something that happens without any regulation.
Some of these examples are actually made during the net neutrality movement, right? Like how it's tolled highways and how there are actually physical world parallels to what Free Basics was doing to the internet, what could happen to the real world problem. So, I mean, the parallels are really amazing. Unfortunately, I guess the internet is safe, but we're seeing that result down in physical world now. But I do have one last question, which is a lot of people tried to emulate the net neutrality movement. When you launched the SaveTheInternet.in, post the net neutrality movement, there were other campaigns like Save the Map movement, when the government brought in a geospatial bill, which actually was very draconian, which said that you must store all of your location data or whatever you share, and sharing maps or creating maps was going to be much harder. But when Save the Map launched, the government stopped or withdrew the geospatial bill. I think there was also one encryption bill where there was a huge backlash for it, and they withdrew that as well. But people try doing or replicating the net neutrality, Save the Internet.in campaign for Aadhaar, but it really didn't work. Why do you think that certain movements have positively been able to push backlash, make government realize what was wrong with some of these initiatives, while something like Aadhaar or NPR and CAA right now, where you can't or people are unable to emulate what the net neutrality movement achieved?
So I think there are two layers to this, you know. So let's start with them. So first thing is, you can't learn from success the same way you learn from failure. Because the Save the Internet movement was a success, we don't have the hindsight of knowing why it was a success. We just know it was a success. And other campaigns which failed to achieve the same level of outcome also create opportunities for understanding why that failure happened. And so I think from the Aadhaar campaign, we have learned why the Save the Internet campaign succeeded. The second part, I think, is on the reasons. The things that worked in favor of the Save the Internet campaign was, one, we managed to capture public imagination because everybody had a gripe about their telecom operator at that point. So it was easy to tell someone that this is personal. It affects you today. It is not a theoretical problem that is going to exist 10 years from now or 20 years from now. It's something you're suffering from today. It's a credible threat. You can see it for yourself. You can feel it for yourself. Okay, so it gives you that one thing. Then the second thing it did also is it was not going up against political messaging that tells you the opposite. So part of what happens when you go after a political target in this country, there is an opposite political party that has already spent a considerable amount of time framing their position in the public imagination. So when the government of India, which has a huge amount of power over media in this country, goes on to talk about how fantastic Aadhaar is, for the public, it's very hard for them to believe that some lone activist sitting in some corner of this country crying wolf is actually more credible than the government. You know, so most people don't know the reality of what's actually going on with any of these things. It's just about somebody said this, somebody else said something else, and who do you think is more credible? So in the case of net neutrality, it was not an existing political position. So it was easy for us to be the first to get to people's ears. In the case of something like Aadhaar, you're trying to change their mind and not make a first impression, which is so much harder. With Aadhaar, we have only been successful enough to point out that it is not as great as it's looking. There are problems. We are not in a position to say it's in fact all bad. Mind you, when I make these statements, these are not on the basis of facts. These are based on impressions. You know, everybody is out to make an impression on someone else. And unearthing the facts behind any impression is just so much harder to do unless you're an expert. If one side makes an impression that everything is fantastic and they do it first, it's much harder for another side to take it down and say, in fact, you are misinformed. The second thing is, when it comes to other initiatives that have not been as successful, despite being unpoliticized, when it comes to things like encryption, where there is actually no strong political position on it, when it comes to things like location data, where again, there is no clear political position on it. In these cases, it is simply a problem of not being able to explain to an individual why it matters to them. And this, I think, is the unknown success of the Save the Internet campaign. Sending email to try while might have been the public facing activity is not how you actually educate people. The education happens separately, and then the final step is the call to action, which is where you send an email to the regulator. The education part is something that the Save the Internet campaign did extraordinarily well, not because it was centrally coordinated, but it was because it was a message that clicked between the first set of influencers who went on to produce high quality content that went out to a large audience. So this is something I think most campaigns should pay attention to, that you have to educate the public. Otherwise, your campaign is not going to work.
I think at some levels, the current NPR or the NRC...
Oh, yes. I think the protesters are doing a fantastic job on that. There is so much more education going on now than there ever was in the last 20 odd years that these things have been building up.
And it's very decentralized. At some level, it was like how you did it, the net neutrality movement, where everyone who was concerned about it was bringing in their own stories and they were telling you how it would affect them. Like, how would it affect the comedians, or how would it affect startups or various stakeholders of the internet? You're seeing a lot of people who are affected because of an NRC or CAA and how it would individually affect them, the LGBTQ community, for example, women, the orphans, all of them. Thank you, Kiran. Thank you for explaining us what happened during the net neutrality movement. I guess we will strive to document it more. Thank you for coming over and doing this episode.
Thank you for listening to the episode of Cyber Democracy. You can listen to this podcast on sonoindia.in or any other podcast app of your choice. As independent producers, we rely on you, our listeners, to support us. So please visit the support page on our website, sonoindia.in, and contribute generously.